after nearly a two-year hiatus, welcome back to the Bull Show. I'm your host, Nils. With me is a guy that's never had his ankles broken on a basketball court because he simply never plays defense. It's Mitch. What's up, my guy?
Yo, defense is for suckers, man.
Wait, is that Mitch on the line or is that Jabari Parker?
that's my homie, man. I was so happy to hear that.
Well, bottom line, I think we share the same philosophy when it comes to pickup hoops. Never try on defense. Never try. Also with us, to drop knowledge on us like I drop buckets, it's SB Nation's Ricky O'Donnell. Ricky, are the rumors true that you've been adopted by LeVar Ball as a fourth ball brother?
It's not true, but I have to say, I thought that the last intro could have been me as well, talking about not playing defense. So that's what I think brings the Bull Show together, our complete disregard for the defensive end of the floor when we play basketball. Now we got Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine to root for, so this is our team, guys. This is it.
This team was made for us. No, I mean, the reason why I mentioned the whole Ball family connection is because you've, interviewed almost all of them by now? With this whole JBA circuit. I mean, I'm thinking we should start calling you LeAngelo Donald Rick O'Donnell? LaRicco Ball?
Yeah, I mean, when you're a basketball writer in July, what else are you going to write about? There's not much to do. So I'm like, I'm talking to LeVar. Why not? I'm talking to LaMelo. LaMelo was really rude. He was like making fun of me as soon as he walked in to the interview area. So, I'd much rather be on the Ball Show than talk to LaMelo myself.
I was about to say, the Ball family, not yet friends of the program?
We might get LeVar on the podcast by the end of the year. We'll see what happens.
All right, for those new to the program or just forgot, since we've been away for so long, we're simply a Bulls podcast from a fan's perspective, sometimes an irrational fan's perspective. Some might even say the wokest perspective. Mitch, our last episode was December 2016, and that basically was the dawn of the Three Alphas era, so it's been a while. Here's my first question.
What's up?
Why in the hell are we resurrecting this podcast? Why are we bringing it back now?
Listen, man, the South Side is back in the building. We're back in the United Center. We signed Jabari Parker as a South Sider. I'm so excited. I'm going to have so much fun rooting for this guy. Stand up, Simeon, Julian, Corliss, Carver, Finger, Harlem, I see you. Brooks, I see you. Even a farmer school, Chaz, I see you. And most importantly, Morgan Park, we are back. South Side, let's do it.
So all it took was a hometown hero to come back home, and the Bulls were firing this podcast back up, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that. I mean, the Bulls got a fun team, right? I think they got five young, really fun players. But listen, the South Side helped. It helped a lot.
All right, so what do you make of this Jabari signing, Mitch? Can you confirm that he is, in fact, the prodigal son returning home to bring Chicago another chip?
Well, I don't know how good the Bulls would be with Jabari, but listen, man, I think it's a smart signing. Rarely does a 23-year-old with such talent hit the market like that. Obviously, it just doesn't happen a lot. Usually, guys resign with their team. So, for the Bulls to kind of get a player that I think has this much talent on the offensive end, so it's a little bit of flashing on the defensive end, and to do it at a real, show it to me contract, basically a 1-year deal, I think it's a really savvy move by the Bulls. If it doesn't work out, we cut bait after a year. We still retain whatever cap room that we have to go after free agents in 2019. But to show it, just this little big baby contract in terms of length, I think it works.
Sounded like a true front office mouthpiece right there. It obviously doesn't happen that often that a guy with Jabari's talent hits the market, but when you consider the fact that he's had two torn ACLs, I mean, it makes a little bit more sense. Ricky, what are your expectations for Jabari this season? Is this going to work, or was it a bad move?
I love that Jabari's in the city, first of all. I mean, you already saw him show up to the Special Olympics like 1 week after the Bulls signed him. I think he's going to have a huge impact just around the city. That's something that he's always shown throughout his career. So from that perspective, I think it's going to be awesome to have Jabari on the Bulls. And I want this to work so bad. Jabari is one of my favorite athletes ever. I remember covering him for the first time when he was in high school at Simeon. And he was always one of those guys who seemed like a can't-miss prospect. But two ACL tears later, and really the other thing that flipped was just, like, the game in general. I feel like the pace and space era sort of happened when Jabari was entering the league. Now you want guys with more well-rounded games, not dudes who are sort of one-trick ponies in terms of scoring the ball, which is what Jabari has shown himself to be thus far. I'm almost a little bummed as a Jabari fan because I'd like him in a better situation where maybe he could, like, take a ton of shots, play the four more, go against some slower dudes. Instead, with the Bulls, he's going to be pigeonholed into the three. I feel like him and Zach LaVine are just going to be trading off possessions of who's chucking shots. No one's going to be playing defense. I worry that Carter and Markkanen, who I think are the two brightest pieces of this rebuild, might get marginalized a little bit. Like, I would ideally like to see the Bulls, like, run the offense through the two young big men because I think they're both really good. I just worry that with Parker and LaVine, both their skill sets are definitely, both their mindsets are, like, score first. We've already heard Zach LaVine this week talk about wanting to be the primary option. I was already just like, oh, man, maybe not a great sign. However, I want it to work really badly. I'm a little skeptical of the basketball fit just because I feel like Parker hasn't shown himself to be a well-rounded player yet. If he plays a little bit more defense, if he moves the ball and can be sort of a team-first guy on the floor, there's definitely not much risk from the Bulls' side. Like Mitch said, I mean, one-year deal, $20 million, who cares? I really, really hope this works because it would be so much fun to root for. The Bulls haven't had someone to make us care since D-Rose, Noah, Taj Gibson. It's been a while. So, Jabari, you could, like, be the one person to trigger my Bulls fandom back into existence.
Hey, and I'd love like to Mitch, see it. Like Mitch said earlier, he already brought the Bulls show back, so Jabari's already on the right track. Yeah, I mean, I'm a little apprehensive about this signing. I mean, I'm with you in that I definitely want to root for this kid and feel like he can make not only a big impact on the team, but also in the community. Bulls don't exactly have the best track record when it comes to injury-prone hometown heroes, particularly Simeon alumni. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Could the Bulls have spent their money any more wisely? You know, I think what kind of made this a little disappointing for me, at least from, like, a basketball standpoint, when I take a look at, you know, their cap situation, is that I started talking myself into that rumored Melo trade, which would have been a salary dump. Of course, that didn't happen. Melo now in the Rockets, which we'll get into in a little later. But I was really kind of talking myself into, you know, maybe picking up an asset like is it Terrence Ferguson, as well as maybe a first-round pick, taking on Melo's contract, buying that out, and even getting rid of, you know, Felicio. Mitch, do you think the Bulls could have spent their money any better than what they did with Jabari?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, the OKC thing is interesting because they took Dennis Schroeder, and I think they want him as a player. So they were looking for guys, actual players back, at least in that deal. You know, if it worked out where the Bulls got a late first-round draft pick and a really weak draft, I just don't know if that is worth passing up a guy like Jabari Parker. You know, I really do think those are kind of pretty even assets. I think Jabari Parker probably has a pretty low chance, given his injury history, of being a big star. But I think the chance is even lower taking on a draft pick in a weak draft. I just don't think there's a big difference there. I prefer the splashier pick, especially given the risk. The risk of not having to worry about the risk of signing him long term, and to your point about fit, I don't really think the fit matters too much. The Bulls aren't going to be very good this year. I think they should be in asset collection mode. You get as many guys as you can. You throw stuff against the wall, see what happens. We really don't know who's going to be the guys in the next great Bulls team. We think it might be Markey. We hopefully it is, but other than that, I don't know about Carter. We'll see. He's a rookie. And really, who else do we have? So I think you collect assets, get young players, see what works, and let's go from there.
This is my thing. I feel like buying out Melo and getting the first-round pick, that's like the hinky move, right? So everyone who's on Twitter too much is going to, like, love that move and think that that's objectively the right move. Fuck that move. This move is way more fun. Whether it works or not, just give me Jabari, right? Yeah. Like, I'm probably pretty harsh on Jabari in terms of the fit. I think that he's overweight. I think he's a ball hog. And I think that he doesn't even acknowledge defense, let alone it's almost inspiring as someone who doesn't play defense and pick up basketball myself. But with that being said, I mean, it's 1 year. I do sort of worry. The only thing I worry about is, like, what if Jabari has, like, a pretty good year, not a great year, which seems like a very likely scenario. You know, Jabari can put the ball in the basket. I just wonder if, like, by giving him that much money, now they're setting themselves up where it's like, if you want to sign him, it's going to be hard to sign him to, like, $13 million a year, right? Because you just gave him $20 million, especially if he's pretty good. So I wouldn't be shocked if this isn't a one-year experiment, especially if the Bulls, you know, can win 35 games or something, which I don't think is totally out of the question. Jabari's scoring around 20 points a game. Like, it's not a totally unrealistic scenario. Then I just wonder, like, you know, maybe they bid against themselves to get him. The other thing I want to say is, why can't we get Nwaba on this team? If you're signing Jabari and, like, Reinsdorf is quote-unquote trying to win, give me Nwaba. Nwaba rules. You could have had both him and Jabari. He was one of the few pleasant surprises of last season, one of the dudes I really enjoyed watching on the Bulls. So I would have liked to have, you know, a defensive complement, at least on the bench, to LaVine and Parker. But just in general, in terms of, like, the Melo move, taking the pick, eating salary, I mean, maybe that's, like, the smart guy move, but fuck that move. It's not fun.
Yeah, and OKC didn't do it, right? OKC went after Dennis Schroeder. They wanted to get a player. They're going to play him lots of minutes. I mean, there was, I guess, the Denver move, but that's, like, a protected first-round pick. You're probably going to get, like, a 20th pick. Like, come on, man. Let's just go get Parker, see where he's at. Let's do it. I like the Parker gamble, and it's really not a gamble. We'll talk about it with Levine. That's the real gamble.
So you mentioned Nwaba. I think, Ricky, I'd much rather have Nwaba on this team than Parker right now, just because, according to Stacey King, one Nwaba is really five on the floor. So Nwaba would have been legit. But, you know, I'm with you, though. You know, I would it's the beginning of what could be a great story, right? Jabari being what Derrick Rose was and could have been. We'll see how it pans out. We joked around earlier about, you know, the comments that he made about, and I'm paraphrasing here, defenses for suckers.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's something we all believe in. But the Bulls are expected to have a lot of offensive firepower this season, not only because of Jabari, but also because of, as you mentioned, Zach LaVine. That was the other big signing by the Bulls this offseason. Zach is back in Chicago on a 4-year, $78 million deal that the Bulls matched after the Kings tried to lure him away in restricted free agency. Now, Mitch, you've kind of mentioned this already. You hated this move.
Yeah, wow. This move is the exact opposite of the Parker move, despite them being pretty similar players, right? They're both super talented guys. They can both handle the ball. They can shoot. I think they are actually modern NBA players on the offensive end. You know, they're bad defensively, but you wanted people to play defense both now and in the past, so they're both not great there. But I really do think that, you know, it's obvious that the Bulls committed to Zach LaVine for 4 years, and that's the difference between this move and the Parker move. The Bulls shouldn't be in the position. They should be in the position of collecting access. They should definitely be trying to find as many young players as they can, and I understand with that in mind why they re-signed LaVine, but I just don't think you do it at that price. It's just not worth it. I think there are better ways to keep that money, because while you may not need it now, I think in 2 or 3 years, we're going to be looking at that contract, sort of like Houston looks at that Ryan Anderson contract, and just be thinking, why did we do that? So not a deal that I like.
I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's a disaster. I don't love LaVine as a player. I mean, I've always liked his talent. I feel like he just needs to sort of get better on the margins of the game, right? He needs to be a more willing passer. He needs to read the floor better. He needs to play a little bit better off-ball defense, or a lot better off-ball defense. But just in general, I don't think the contract is going to look that bad. Put it in comparison to the one Devin Booker signed. That was 5 years, $158 million with the Suns. That's $31 million a year. LaVine is making $19.5 million a year. I kind of feel like those two guys, there's not like $11 million separating them to me. I don't think so. Not a year.
You're probably right. But to sign a guy like Booker, who you are pretty much sure that is kind of at the top of the two-guard class, you're gonna have to pay him a near-max deal. That's just kind of the market, right?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean,
I mean, you're not going to be.
I don't think that there's that huge of a difference between LaVine and Booker. Like, especially if LaVine just sort of improves around the margins. We already know that he scored 20 points a game or 19 points a game, whatever it was, before he tore that ACL. Super athletic, really good jump shooter, someone who can actually create their own offense for once on the Bulls. Yeah. That'll be fun to watch.
But we got a few of these guys other, now.
Look at some of these other deals that were signed. Kevin Love today, 4 years, 120. It's like if you sign a dude on his third deal, they're making $40 million a year. To get Zach LaVine for ages 24 through 27, $19 million, I don't think that's an untradeable contract. I mean, Timofey Mozgov got that much and got traded twice already. So,
yeah. But you had to pay stuff to trade him, right?
Yeah, I guess, which, you know, I don't know. But age 24 through 27, I just feel like these will be the best years of LaVine's career. The only thing I want everyone to do is buy in, share the ball, and try to win. Like, yeah. Zach LaVine, you got your money, bro. You don't need to be up in your PPG at this point. You know what I mean? Like, space the floor, play a team game, make everyone happy, give Jabari all the glow when he needs it. He's the hometown boy. But I don't think it's a disaster. I don't love it.
You guys, I'm actually okay with the LaVine signing, maybe even more so than the Parker signing. Because LaVine's actually fun to watch. And don't forget, he has one less ACL tear than Jabari. Even though now the Bulls have invested, what, we're looking at $40 million in three ACL tears for next season. But probably the biggest thing, and this is to hashtag stay woke, LaVine's deal expires right when LeBron becomes a free agent again. That's the Bulls front office staying light years ahead.
Bro, we're off LeBron. It's about Bronny Jr. We're waiting for the 2023 draft. Give us Bronny Jr. That's when the rebuild really begins. The 2023 plan is already taking shape.
That's what I'm talking about.
You know, it's real interesting, though. Like, the pressure is on a lot of guys, but I think the person that has the most pressure, or the group that has the most pressure, is the coaching staff. There are so many young dudes on this team. All kind of have little parts of their game that need to be developed, with maybe the exception of Carter, which we'll see. But, you know, Chris Dunn and his ability to score, and ability to finish at the lane, LaVine and Parker's ability to play defense, marketing kind of fitting in and figuring out where he's going to be with kind of his new body and where he'll play on defense. Like, the coaching staff has got a lot of issues to deal with. And do you guys think that they're up to the task?
Well, I personally think that playing off that, the most important guy on the roster this year is Chris Dunn, because there's no one else on the perimeter that's going to play defense. He's going to have to defend the entire perimeter by himself, especially if LaVine and Parker are next to him. Also, with all these guys who have score-first mentalities, Markkanen, Parker, LaVine, you're going to need someone to get them all involved. And it's like Dunn has shown himself to be a pretty good player. He's an excellent defensive player, but I feel like he's only average as a facilitator. He's not someone who's like a great passer, a great playmaker. He needs to take that next step this year, be a great passer and a great playmaker, because with all these scores, someone needs to like get the offense like flowing and to actually get them playing team basketball. The only thing I worry about is that Dunn's playing for a contract this year, too. He just saw LaVine chuck bad shots and get $19 million a year. So what's Dunn's mindset going to be? Is he going to focus on getting his teammates involved? Is he going to focus on playing lockdown defense across the perimeter? Or is he going to want to try to get his points per game up to try to get a big deal on his next contract? To me, that's one of the biggest questions the Bulls are facing this year.
Yeah, I think that Marcus Smart deal really helped out the Bulls, right? Because I feel like that is Chris Dunn's kind of prototype. So the fact that he didn't get the same big money that the Parkers of the world did hopefully will work out for the Bulls.
Defenders don't get paid. Jabari was right. No, I mean, I don't know. I agree with you, Mitch. I feel like there is going to be a ton of pressure on this coaching staff, particularly Horberg. What is he, on the fourth year of his deal now? Like, I feel like this is kind of a make-or-break year for him because he finally has the pieces to fit his offensive style. But I don't know if there's going to be enough basketballs to go around because there seems to be a lot of guys. I mean, even before you get to Chris Dunn, as you were saying, Ricky, you know, Jabari's a scorer, LaVine's a scorer, Markkanen can put the ball in the hoop. And like you said earlier, the offense probably should be ran through Markkanen and Carter, and we'll get to him in a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Let me ask you guys this. How much are the Bulls going to average on offense, and how much will they need to average to be at least a .500 team next year?
I mean, I think that we need to really temper our expectations if we think this is going to be a 5-3 team. Like,
I'm not saying they are.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is, do the Bulls need to put up 130 points a game to at least be a decent team? Because we know of their defensive inefficiencies.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to have to score a lot of points. I think they have a lot of offensive-first players. I'm not even sure they're going to be, like, a super great offense. I mean, we really do have to see how these things fit. They have lots of good individual talents in terms of offense, but I think there's going to be some work to do. So I think they'll have to score a lot of points, obviously, to make up for the defense that might not be there. But I think that I wouldn't particularly say that the Bulls are going to be a great offense yet. I want to see what's happening. I don't really expect these guys to be very good. I think we're a few years away.
Yeah, I mean, if they could finish even like 15th in offense, I feel like that would be a huge win for them. I don't know the number off the top of my head for their offensive efficiency last year. I want to say it was like 26 or 27, though. They scored 103 points a game. I would love to see some games where they score 110, right? And I feel like one thing that's definitely going to happen this year is Jabari's going to go off for like a totally sick game multiple times, you know, a month, or it's going to happen every once in a while, even if the signing doesn't quote unquote work out. And we're going to get so hyped off that. That's really going to be the best part of this year, is Nils is going to be making memes about a seventh banner. It's going to be Jabari's head on D-Rose's face for some of his classic moments. You know this is going to happen, and that's one thing that I really look forward to.
Will this be similar to the three games that Dwayne Wade was hitting threes? And we were basically just figuring out, like, would the championship parade go through Grant Park again, or should we switch it up? Should we take it to Jackson Park? Like, do y'all remember those 3 days? That was a lit 3 days.
Hey, man, the three alphas, they had so much promise early on. Hey, I need Jabari to thrive, because if he does in a Chicago uniform, this is going to pave the way. And again, here's another theory / stay woke perspective from yours truly. If we can get Jabari to just thrive in a Chicago uniform, that's going to pave the way for other hometown heroes to come back home. And I'm talking Anthony Davis. But you know, hey, baby steps. What, Anthony Davis doesn't become a free agent until like 2021 or something? You know, maybe next year we bring back D. Rose. And then after that, you know, Amon Shumpert was recently seen wearing a Bulls jersey. Cliff Alexander, what's he up to? I'm sure he'd be open to take a 15th roster spot of the Bulls. We got Pat Beverly. Who else? Who else am I?
Yo, I need Tyler Ulis on this team right now. Him and Jabari were playing pickup this weekend. Just watching that gave me all the feels. We need Tyler Ulis on the squad.
Bring them all home, Reinsdorf. Bring them all home. I'm sure they all have a house in the area.
Yeah, we'll sign Zach Norville Jr. It'll be all good. It'll be great.
Well, okay, so, Ricky, you mentioned this earlier. The funny thing about LaVine, for as entertaining and flashy as he is, hasn't exactly shown the best decision-making or the highest basketball IQ, particularly on defense, as we talked about. Someone who appears to be the exact opposite of that is the Bulls' number one draft pick, Wendell Carter Jr. You guys like that segue? Got no rust. Got no rust from taking it back. Podcast hosting. Okay, so if you saw or read about the Summer League, you know that Dub CJ, a.k.a. Wendell the Fundamental, a.k.a. the Black Panther.
He was looking impressive. Oh, no.
We'll workshop that the nicknames.
Black Panther, I cannot let that stand. I can't let it stand. I got to stand up.
I don't know. When you open up your summer league debut with what, 5 blocks in like 20 minutes, I don't know. It might be able to stick. Ricky, we'll go to you first. What's your scouting report on Wendell Carter Jr. and what's the ceiling?
I love Wendell Carter Jr. I think he's going to be so good, and I'm not really giving the Bulls that much credit for it, because I think they would have taken worse players over him if given the opportunity. But picking at 7, all the franchises in front of them are also trash franchises. It's a bad front office. So the Bulls, I really think, locked into what's going to be a great player for them. My only worry is that, you know, are now they just going to tell him to rebound for Parker and LaVine? I feel like he's so good across the board that this is someone you really could run the offense through. His skill set is just above average in everything. He's a really good inside scorer. He's going to be a very good shooter eventually when he gets comfortable from the NBA line. He can already make free throws. great rebounder. We saw his shot blocking in Summer League was phenomenal, just ripping the ball out of Zizic's hands. That's one of the best Summer League plays I've ever seen. He's just so solid across the board. He can make plays out of the pick and roll, too, as a passer. So I actually think that Carter's ceiling might even be higher than Markkanen's, because Markkanen, the only advantage he really has on him is from a skill set perspective is he's an elite shooter, whereas Carter's merely a very good shooter. Carter hasn't beaten every other aspect of the game in terms of, you know, shot blocking, passing, inside scoring, and perimeter defense. And perimeter defense was the one question about Carter. I covered Carter for years as a recruit when he was a recruit. He was a little chubby. He just didn't have a very, like, defined body, and I thought that that might be the one thing sort of going against him, especially in this era of the NBA. Everyone switches on defense. You need your big man to be able to stick with guards for a few seconds off a switch on a perimeter. That was a question for Carter. Would he be able to do that? That's why he fell to 7. He looked awesome in that regard in Summer League. He swatted multiple Trae Young three-pointers, sticking with him on the perimeter. He looked really, really good moving his feet. And he's in great shape now. You can already tell he's transformed his body a ton just since the time he was at Duke. So I think Carter could be phenomenal. I don't think he's going to put up super big per-game stats. I don't think he's going to be the flashiest player. But what I do think he's going to have is an impact on winning, and someone who's going to make all the selfless team plays, someone who's going to take nothing off the table and bring a lot to the table on both ends of the floor. I just hope that we can see how good this guy really is early in his career, because, you know, the guy he's most often compared to is Al Horford. I feel like we didn't really appreciate Horford early in his career. He was on some bad Hawks teams where Joe Johnson and Josh Smith were chucking up bad shots all the time. He didn't really realize
how good really familiar
Horford was until he got to the Celtics. So the only thing I have with Carter is, like, just feature his skill set, feature his talent, because this guy can really play. I think he's going to be an effective player for the Bulls from day one. And when his shooting starts to come around after a couple of years in the league, if it takes that long, I think they're going to have a great two-way weapon on their hands.
Wow, I didn't realize that, but I think you connected the dots there. Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker are this generation's Joe Johnson and Josh Smith. Is that... No, and you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say it. Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen are this generation's Tim Duncan and Dave Robinson.
Love that.
Let's go. Let's go. Not one, not two. Mitch, what are your early thoughts on Carter Jr.?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm in the place to evaluate draft picks. I was a big Chris Mim guy. So I'll just say this. I'm really glad the Bulls drafted the best player available instead of the best fit available. You know, I think that there are a bunch of good threes out there. If they would have went that road to get the best fit available, they may be looking at one of the bridges guys. But instead of doing that, they got the best player. So I'm happy about that. I trust Ricky's evaluation. If he's excited, I'm excited. I will say this that I'm not getting excited about. Y'all are not going to get me gassed up about the Summer League. Never forget that Tony Snell, Doug McDermott, and Bobby Portis were all Summer League first team. They were all Summer League first team. Never forget that Jerian Grant was a Summer League MVP. Never forget that Denzel Valentin was hitting MJ-like game winners to win the Summer League championship.
Y'all and now he's getting cooked by the Drew League.
Me gassed off Summer League. Need to see it in the big time. You barbecuing bad players, that's what you should be doing.
Hey, I would have felt more excited, more comfortable if you said you hated the Carter Jr. pick.
Exactly, right?
That means the exact opposite would have happened, and he would have been a franchise cornerstone. All right, I know it's not even August yet, and we're still months away from training camp, but give me your early prediction for this upcoming bowl season. I mean, Mitch, I know that you already said you don't think they're going to be good, but give me the number of wins and whether you think they make the playoffs.
I would say 29 wins, and they won't make the playoffs.
Ricky?
The Bulls won 27 games last year. 14 of those games were with Mirotić in the lineup. Mirotić not here anymore. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bulls are pretty bad, especially if Dunn gets hurt. They have no one behind Dunn in terms of a point guard until they sign our boy Tyler Ulis, and he can and start the Anthony Davis plan. But I'm going to say 20. I'm going to say 27 again. They won 27 last year. I'll go 27 again.
Let's go lottery. We back, baby.
And you just got to make the top five this year, too. Right, change the lottery odds.
Right. There's the lottery reform kicks in this year. So, hey, Start up those tanks. Tank season is back on.
Yo, I got the 2019 mock draft done already on SBNation.com. If you want to check that out, Cam Reddish, RJ Barrett, that's what we need.
Company man. I got one more thing for you guys to ask you guys a question about that I've been thinking about a lot. I'm kind of taking a step back, and I meant to bring it up when we were talking about Jabari Parker. Do you guys think that the presence of Jabari Parker stunts the growth of Lauri Markkanen?
I think it's possible. Because to me, like, ideally, I would like Markkanen to have the most shot attempts on the team in a perfect world. But I feel like, realistically, he's going to be third at best. So they're not really going to be running the offense through Markkanen and Carter. Like, I hope that they don't just tell Markkanen to stand in the corner to space for Levine and Parker when they're doing, like, their one-on-one shit. So I think it's possible. I wouldn't be shocked if Markkanen has a sophomore slump because of that. With that being said, I don't think it alters his long-term projection too much. He really showed out in a lot of different areas last year. I think they're going to be really exciting. And you know he's an elite shooter at 7 foot tall during an era when shooting is really at a premium. So I think that's on the table, but I'm not going to get too worried about it just yet because I still think, you know, he's 21 years old. He's got a really bright future.
You know, on the bright side, I was going to say that perhaps Jabari's presence on defense will accelerate Lauri's defensive development, considering he's going to have to be on the help side a ton more and be able to cover up a lot of those mistakes, not only from Jabari, but also from Levine. So, I mean, you know, if you want to find a silver lining in that, there it is. Offensively, kind of to echo what Ricky was saying, you're just hoping that Jabari doesn't limit Markkanen's opportunities to playmake. Not necessarily to shoot, but to playmake. So Markkanen, if he's posting up or even running the pick and roll, because there were definitely plays last year where he was the ball handler in a pick and roll, was coming off screens or posting up, and whether he was putting up a shot or at least, you know, finding the open teammate, those are opportunities for Lauri to develop, to play make, and to become a better player. Now, if you put the ball in Jabari's hand, who I believe historically has been a ball stopper, and like Ricky was saying, Markkanen's just standing in the corner, you know, that is definitely going to stunt his growth.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that you made, Nils. I've never thought that, like, shots are a straight line to, like, development. I think that minutes matter, being in situations matter. Body development is really important. Skill development is really important. But you really bring up a good point. You know, I've kind of pushed back on the idea that just because the guy's not getting 17 shots, maybe he's getting 11 shots, he can still develop. But the, you know, being in the position to kind of really play make it a really great position. So that puts even more pressure, I think, on the coaching staff to get it figured out and ensure that the offense runs properly and everybody's getting their ability, you know, getting their time to kind of shine.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much Markkanen's usage rate drops off from last year to this year when you have, you know, obviously the ball in Jabari, Levine, and Dunn's hands. All right, we'll wrap up with a quick look around the league. Of course, no bigger news this offseason than LeBron leaving Cleveland for Hollywood. Ricky, your knee-jerk reaction when the news dropped that the Lakers became the LeBron-geless Lakers?
Yeah, I was shocked because I didn't feel like that was the best place for LeBron to win titles. If I'm LeBron, I just want to win titles. I don't care about anything else. But you saw with him signing the long-term deal there for as long as 4 years, he probably thinks he can bring people to him instead of before where he was always, like, arriving with other stars to form a super team. So I'm skeptical that it'll work. I am a big Lonzo guy. I think Lonzo's the truth, and he's going to be, like, the breakout player of this NBA season. But do they get a title in the Warriors era? I mean, that's going to be tough. And if LeBron, you know, isn't gaming the system to try to put himself in the best position to win a championship, it's going to be difficult to beat Golden State.
It definitely seemed like a non-basketball move, meaning this was a decision for him to live his best life in LA to raise his family, because especially with the signings that they've made after LeBron joined them, this doesn't put him any closer to winning a title in my mind. In fact, I even threw this around in our group chat that, I mean, are we sure that the Lakers actually make the playoffs next year? In that bloodbath of a Western Conference, I mean, you have to think that either one of the Pelicans, Blazers, Timberwolves, or Nuggets drop off. But even then, like, those are still some pretty legit teams. So they're definitely going to have to earn their playoff spot. And, you know, like I said, I don't think this was really I feel like LeBron was set on his legacy. You know, he won Cleveland a championship, and it was good from that standpoint. And was like, look, I'm just gonna enjoy my time in LA while my career winds down. How about you, Mitch?
I can't believe a man's left Cleveland to win 44 games, get some hot stop tips and magic, and get a better role in Train Wreck 2. I don't understand that, but that's all I got to say about that.
The other big offseason news, which was more recent, of course, somewhat of a stunner because it happened at, 4 in the morning, Central time. Spurs traded disgruntled superstar Kawhi Leonard to the Raptors for DeMar DeRozan. Mitch, I'll start with you. Who won this trade, Spurs or Raptors?
I think that the Raptors won this trade, but I think the Spurs did well. And it's really because I still think the Spurs have that fairy dust, and I will be interested to see what happens to DeMar DeRozan when he gets in the Spurs system. What happens to his defense? What happens to all the things that make a player great? I would not be shocked that DeMar DeRozan takes his game to the next level, and we think of DeMar DeRozan very differently with a year in the Spurs system. With that said, I think the Raptors put themselves in a really good position. If Kawhi is healthy, they have as good of a chance as anybody in the East to get to the finals. And if that position, that opportunity presents itself, I think you've got to do it.
I think no-brainer move for the Raptors. They won 59 games last year, which people are going to forget because LeBron smoked them 4-0 in the playoffs. But Kawhi, if he's healthy, I mean, he's a top five player in this league with LeBron, Durant, Curry, and Anthony Davis. That's a massive upgrade from DeRozan, who I do think is good. Like, DeRozan gave his heart and soul to Toronto. He was a really awesome player for them for a long time. But you know what, man? It's a business. They made a big upgrade going to Kawhi. I kind of think that they're going to have a good shot to go to the finals, too. I might put Boston a little bit ahead of them, but I think Toronto's right there, especially because you know Masai's aggressive, too. Like, he could make a midseason move, get him another piece. Really like the Raptors. Think they got a chance at the finals this year.
Totally agree. I will say one more thing. It is the Danny Green news that came out that he had some injuries with his groin and he played with it the entire year. I think it's super interesting given what we talked about with the whole NBA Twitter talked about with Kawhi.
So do you guys think, where do you guys stand on the Raptors doing DeMar dirty like that? I mean, did they do him dirty? Or as Ricky, you were saying, you know, it's a business, get over it, dude.
I mean, I don't think so. Like, they gave him a ton of money always. Like, they always seemed like they treated him well before this. I think what DeRozan's mad about is that they apparently told him they weren't going to trade him weeks before they did. But, I mean, when you're in a business like the NBA, can you really be shocked when you get traded? Like, it happens to everyone. The obvious comparison is Isaiah Thomas getting traded last year by the Celtics. That was even worse when you think about everything Isaiah Thomas went through personally leading up to that trade. To me, it's like, get over it, DeRozan. Like, you're still getting your money. You're still going to be the focal point of an offense with the Spurs. And now we got a San Antonio team with LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan that's just taking mid-range jumpers. What a twist. No one saw that coming. We'll see if Popovich can work his magic.
Yeah, Popovich has always zigged when the league is zagged. You know, they stayed going big. They stick with the mid-range jumpers. I kind of like that about the Spurs. They know what they do, and they stick with it. So I'm really interested in seeing what happens with DeMar DeRozan. Like, I can't say that enough. I got this feeling that he's just going to be a completely different player. He was already a really great player with that Spurs magic. We'll see.
So we talked about LeBron, or I talked about LeBron living his best life in L.A., someone who might be even living a better life and someone who's secured that bag time and time.
You got to pay me all my money. You can't pay me some of my money. You can't pay me both of my money. I need all of it.
Of course, we are referring to none other than Carmelo Anthony, now on the Rockets for the vet minimum. Of course, that's after the Thunder. Or was it the Thunder? No, it was, why am I blanking out on who bought him out?
The Hawks.
The Hawks bought him out for his full salary. Melo to the Rockets, kind of a move that not many people, at least on basketball Twitter, are that high on. I want to get your guys' take. Does this bring them any closer to beating the Warriors now that they have Melo in the lineup. Are they still the second best team in the league, Mitch?
I mean, I'm interested in seeing what would happen to this move. At first blush, no, I wouldn't say that this is a move that really puts the Rockets over the top. With that said, I just think that D'Antoni has done so much great work in the last 3 years that he's given us, I think he's given himself a lead to kind of see what happens. I mean, bringing in Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon was a move that was basically roundly laughed at, and he turned both of those guys into really key pieces. Bringing in Chris Paul along with James Harden to run this kind of double point guard set was not something that we all said was going to be a great thing, and it worked out well. You know, he's had a history of talking guys who were starters into bench roles with Gordon and with Anderson. I'm giving D'Antoni the benefit of the doubt at this point. He's got a hot hand right now. He can take that jump shot that's a little bit contested, that's a little bit out of his range, and we'll see what happens.
Ricky, do you like Melo to the Rockets, or should he have gone somewhere else?
No, I think that makes him worse, to be totally honest. I mean, I'd rather have Ariza and Mahabute instead of Melo. They did get James Enos, who I think is going to be pretty good for them. They got him from the Grizzlies, but I feel like Melo just makes him worse. Dude, Melo's so cooked. He looked terrible last year in Oklahoma City. I want to believe that he can turn into Olympic Melo, where all he does is just sort of stand at the three-point arc, play three-point arc to three-point arc, and just rip shots, but I feel like he's cooked. This is like his Clippers Paul Pierce stage right now, and if they're counting on Carmelo to get him past the Warriors, I don't think that's a very good bet.
Now, which career path, NBA career path, so let's remove any college accolades or Olympic accolades or achievements, which NBA career path would you have rather had? Melo's, where you never win a championship, but, you know, you've secured the bag, you're you know, the number one player for in the prime of your career for the teams that you're playing on, or maybe like a guy like David West, who, and maybe David West is not the best example, but someone, basically someone who is more of a fringe guy, but has won maybe a couple rings, has been on a couple good teams. I mean, who's your ideal scenario here?
I can answer it. I'm going to take the guy that made $229 million over his career. That's the guy I'm going to take. I don't know about you, Ricky, but you know he actually hasn't lost a lot. Like he's had like 10 or 11 seasons over 500. So I know a couple years in New York didn't go bad, but give me that 229. I'll take that one for five.
I just Googled David West's career earnings. David West made $90 million and counting.
Yeah, that's less than 229.
Yeah, that's less than 229, but like, we should be taller and be NBA players, I think, right. So these podcasters would be a little more profitable.
You know, if I'm Melo, I just start Googling how much it costs to get replica NBA trophies, Larry O'Brien trophies made, right. And just start buying them and putting them in my display cases. And just, you know, hey, I may have not actually won a title, but this money can buy me some trophies.
Right. But he hasn't been like this career loser. Like first, he got Lala. A second, he won two Olympic gold medals. He won an NCAA championship. He had a bunch of winning seasons in Denver. Like he hasn't done poorly. Like certainly there are decisions that he made that could put him in a better situation to win even more. But like there's even talk on Twitter that like Melo might not be a Hall of Famer. Like. Get out of here with that. Like, Melo had a good career. He had a pretty good career, so.
All right, last one. We'll end on this. So, guys, it's been over a year since we've had our last show. As I mentioned at the top, a lot has happened with the Bulls and around the league. Is there a hot take you have that you would have gotten off had we been recording during that time frame? You know, give me something that you would have wished you had the Bulls show platform to comment on. Had we released an episode in the last year and a half? Ricky, we'll start with you.
I only got three words, man. Bulls and six.
I agree with you there. I'm assuming you're referencing the three alphas going up 2-0 against the Celtics. Hey, without a Rajon Rondo injury, I'm pretty sure we make the conference finals. And who knows if we would have gotten Markkanen, and who knows if we would have ran the three alphas back. I mean, what a sliding doors moment. Rajon Rondo, a turning point in Bulls franchise history.
We had it, man. The prophecy was coming true.
Mitch, I feel like you've had a lot to say in the last year and a half. This is your time to say your piece. Anything that's happened in the last year and a half? Or are you just saving these hot takes for the months and I guess hopefully years to come?
Yeah, I don't have many. I just think that the Warriors are like the luckiest organization in the history of sports.
Ooh, spicy. Explain.
We've talked about it before. This is not something that's new, but the fact that Chris Paul goes down, I'm a weird dude. Like, I love Chris Paul. I love James Harden. I wanted them to get over the hump so badly. And for that injury to happen the way it did, it's just like typical Warriors. Like, they always find a way to – and then they're a great team. They probably would have won every championship that they had somebody go down. But from Kyrie Irving to Chris Paul to Kawhi Leonard, it's just – it's wild the breaks they've gotten.
Are you saying that other teams getting injured isn't staying light years ahead?
I'm saying that – other teams getting injured is not staying like years ahead. Being able to sign a top three guy for like a $10 million year contract is not like years ahead.
Hey, well, when you're ready to accept things like fate and destiny, as you know, I moonlight as a Dub Nation bandwagoner, and there's plenty of room on the bandwagon for you. Just let me know. Let me know when you want me to open up this seat for you.
Hey, man, just wait till Bronny's rocking a Chicago uniform. You're going to be trading in that Warriors jersey in a heartbeat.
You know it. You know it. All right. Well, that'll do it for this comeback episode of The Bulls Show. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes. Also, follow us on Twitter. I'm at The Bulls Show. My man Mitch is at Sharon ILJP. Sharon, are we going to bring back Mitch Don't Lie?
Sharon ILJP, baby.
So professional.
S-H-A-R-O-N-E-I-L-J-P.
And, of course, Ricky is at SBN_Ricky. Guys, we did it. Comeback season. Comeback show is in the books. Now, would you say that this Bulls Show return was more like MJ coming back to the Garden and dropping a double nickel, or is this more like D-Rose coming back and tearing his meniscus in Portland?
You're already making me sad, man. You're bumming me out with that outro.
That wasn't a funny joke. That wasn't funny at all.
I'm going to go watch the D-Rose Greatest Play special before I go to sleep and get
excited.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
All right. Well, I guess that'll do it. Till next time, guys. Thanks for listening. Bulls Show.
Ciao.